Money, Riches, and Wealth is sponsored by the Financial Consulate.
Say you don't need no diamond rings, and I'll be satisfied. Tell me that you want the kind of things the money just can't buy. I don't care too much for money. Money can buy me love.
This is Talk Radio 680 WCBM. Time now for Money, Riches, and Wealth. Here's your host, Drew Tignanelli.
This is Drew Tignanelli here with Money, Riches, and Wealth, and it's co-host Michael P. McCarthy again tonight.
Good evening.
Good evening. How are you?
I'm doing pretty good.
You know, you could be that guy on that horror movie. Good evening.
Good evening. I think I'd end up coming off more like Count Chocula.
Anyway, we're here on an open show again tonight. Next week, we're going to be doing our charity night, as we always do in Thanksgiving, you know, the night before Thanksgiving. We talk about charity and charitable giving, and we're going to be talking with Russ Snyder, the president of the Mid-Atlantic Volunteers of America, and, you know, because we believe that that's an important part of your personal financial planning is to be charitable. But, you know, everybody has different opinions on that, but we believe that it's an integral part of your personal financial planning. But then tonight is just an open show, Michael. So therefore, our listeners get to be our guests tonight. They get to determine the direction. So if you had things you wanted to talk about before the end of the year, this is one of your last few chances to have an open show to do it. 410-922-6680. 410-922-6680. If you want to call in and ask a question.
Yeah.
Go ahead.
Well, and I was going to say, let's not let it happen like last week when we had very few callers in the beginning of the show and then had to rush through them at the end. But with that, we've got Craig in Westminster. Craig, you got a question on Medicare?
Yes, hello.
Hey, how you doing?
Very good. You guys are pretty smart.
We try.
Well, Mikey is.
I like your advice. A few weeks ago, I called about you know, the rise in Social Security, which is 5.9%, I believe. And
okay.
I said, well, what would Medicare Part B? What are they going to do with that? And I think you said, well, it'll probably go up a little bit. Well, last week they announced it would go up $21, which is 14%. Is there some stopgap on that where you don't pay the whole increase?
Yeah, so the way that works is there's a no harm clause in Medicare. So what that means is if your Social Security goes up by $50 or something, or let's say $10, Medicare Part B can't go up too much to negatively impact your Social Security increase. It can go up, may be able to go up $5 or so forth, and I don't know what the exact rule is. I do know it cannot exceed your Social Security increase. So,
okay,
you know,
and they're going to take the whole 21. It's going to go from 148
To 170,
or the whole smear, because, you know, people will get more than $21 a month.
Yeah, they're going to take the whole thing. You know, again, it's the hold harmless clause, so
right,
they can't increase it any more than what right would impact your Social Security check by, you know, et cetera. So if it's 5% up on your Social Security check, then Medicare can't go up more than 5% or so. There's a specific law on this.
Yeah, but they're taking 14. But $21 is 14% of the, $21 on $148 is like 14% is going up.
Yeah, well, you know, but part of the reason is that they haven't increased the Medicare as much as they wanted to over the last 10 years or so. So, you know, they're trying to catch up now is what I'm guessing. But
well,
there are, you know, so
the news said there was an expensive new drug for Alzheimer's disease. They blamed on that.
Oh, you know, the media, you know, needs things to talk about. I don't, you know, I get so frustrated listening to the media nowadays. They're, you know, anyway.
Fear and greed.
Fear and greed is what they're all about. They're all about making money. Most media nowadays, there's no such thing as a journalist anymore. They're all salespeople trying to create fear and greed in people to come back to listen to their broadcasts, watch their videos, read their articles, et cetera, et cetera. So, you know, people should never listen to media for any information. They should watch lots of different things, pull things together, take a collective wisdom from numerous sources and look for people that you trust that are that seem to be trustworthy as to the information they give. So anyway, all right, buddy, good call. All right,
thank you. Have a blessed Thanksgiving.
You do the same.
You too.
You did the same. We're on an open show, Michael, 410-922-6680, 410-922-6680. You've only got a few weeks left in the year. Well, we'll be here on open shows that you can talk to us. So if you got a question, you might want to call in and ask that now, 410-922-6680. You know, Mike, one of the big things we've been dealing with, or at least I've been dealing with, I don't know what you do all day long, but I've been doing so many dang Roth conversions,
oh,
it isn't funny, and trying to figure out the exact number that we want to do is, you know, nothing more than theory, but still, everybody out there listening to us, if they're not thinking about Roth conversions and what is logical to do, and that's the problem with this industry, is 90% of the people in this industry aren't tax-oriented. They're sales-oriented. They're sales in insurance products and investments, and they don't understand taxes.
Yeah, you know, and to talk about some of the specifics, I mean, one of the things that I think you and I both see is that Roth conversion just makes sense such a high percentage of the time. So often, some number of Roth conversion makes sense. One of the things, and I think we talk about that a lot, so what an interesting topic might be is, what are some of the times when a Roth conversion doesn't make sense? And go ahead.
The answer to that question is simply, if I think my tax bracket today is the same or higher than what I expect it to be in the future, then I want to be doing Roth conversions. If I think my tax bracket's going to be lower in the future, then I wait to do my Roth conversion. So take myself, for example. But in the last 10 years or so, I've done no Roth conversions. All of a sudden, I move to Florida and bam, I do a giant Roth conversion. Why?
No state taxes.
No state taxes anymore, you know, because, you know, I knew my income tax bracket was going to go lower in the future. So I deferred Roth conversions until I made this move. And now I'm doing them.
And also, if you're in a position where right now you're at a pretty high paying job, but you know that you're getting ready to retire, and when you retire, your taxable income that's reported on your tax return is going to drop. That's another reason to say, oh, you know what, maybe I'll wait 2 years and then I'll do that Roth conversion. Yeah,
then I'll consider that. Right now, Mikey, we have to take a pause, but let our listeners know we don't have anybody online. 410-922-6680 if you want to call in and ask your question. And we only have a few weeks left in the year to get your questions in. 410-922-6680. We're going to be right back with Money, Riches, and Wealth. Hi, this is Drew Tignanelli of the Financial Consulate, saying a financial advisor must have a tax planning passion. I'm appealing only to those with a net worth of more than $5 million or with taxable income of over $400,000. You are the target for higher and higher taxes. If you're in this elite club, you can no longer afford to have a financial advisor that is not passionate to minimize taxes. I'm appealing to you with income over $400,000 or a net worth greater than $5 million because you are the target and need the Financial Consulate's passion to minimize income taxes and estate taxes. Call to set up your introductory meeting, 410-823-7283 or 410-823-SAVE or online, financialconsulate.com. If your taxable income is $400,000 or more, or your net worth is over $5 million, you are the target. So call to begin your tax plan, 410-823-7283, or online, financialconsulate.com.
Now back to more of Money, Riches, and Wealth on Talk Radio 680 WCBM.
And we're back. Money, Riches, and Wealth. This is Drew Tignanelli here with Michael P. McCarthy, and we only have one caller online, Michael, but we should be putting out the number and requests if anybody has any questions, 410-922-6680. You get to direct the conversation. You get to say, this is a topic that's important to me. If you can help me with this, it would be very beneficial. And always keep in mind that there's probably 5, 10, 20, 30 people out there love to hear the answer to your question. So do them a favor that are unwilling to call in and ask your question so that other people can hear the answer, 410-922-6680. Okay, Michael, what do you got going on there?
Well, without further ado, we're going to go to Linda in Millersville. And Linda, you have a question on annuities.
Yes, could you please talk about the general rules for annuities and what they are exactly?
So when you say the general rules, you just want to know in general what are they and how do they work and so forth?
Correct, yeah.
Okay, so an annuity is a life insurance product, okay? And there's two sides to an annuity. There's the accumulation side of the annuity. That's where you're saving and building up money for the future. And then there's the payout side of the annuity, and that's where the life insurance feature comes in. So the life feature comes in, and where the life insurance company says, okay, whatever you accumulated, I'm going to disperse it to you over your lifetime so that you don't have to worry about how long you live. I mean, that's the general gist of what an annuity is. Now, here's where it gets complicated, Linda. Is the insurance companies take the laws of the annuity and the, you know, and the historical precedents of what they were, and as people get more options away from annuities, the insurance companies come up with more creative ideas to make annuities quote unquote appealing to people. And there's where the rub comes in, is that insurance companies are very creative today. I guess that's an understatement, Mikey, wouldn't you say?
Absolutely.
Very creative today. And so they talk about these annuities as if they're paying 5, 6, 7% even. And like you're getting this incredible opportunity for the future. And nothing could be further from the truth. It's how these products work and how the salespeople make them, you know, get them sold to the public.
I know, but I have, like, friends who have annuities, what they think is a pension.
Yes, okay. Now, all pensions are annuities, okay? So if I work for the federal government, I would be, I got a pension. It is an annuity. By definition, it is an annuity. Think about it. If I work for the federal government for 30 years and they say, okay, Drew, you worked here for 30 years, I'm going to give you $4,000 a month for the rest of your life, that is an actuarial calculation. It's an insurance annuity where they're liquidating. Remember, there were two parts to the annuity. There's the first part, the accumulation part. The second part is the liquidation part, guaranteeing that I'll get that money over the rest of my life. So all pensions, in theory, are annuities. So if I get a pension from a company, I have an annuity. Now, though you can buy an annuity from an insurance company yourself, just you got $200,000, you can go to an insurance company and say, hey, I'm going to give you $200,000. How much will you give me for the rest of my life?
Oh.
Am I helping you here?
Well, you have to put money into it on the income side, and
you
that determines how much you get out on the other side.
Yeah, so if I put in $200,000, I might get $1,000 or so a month, okay? If I put in $500,000, I might get $2,000 or so a month, you know? So the amount of money you put in is going to determine actuarially and what age you are. That's an important part too, right? So if I was 40 years old and I gave them $200,000, they're probably only going to give me like $600 a month, right? But if I'm 68 years old, they might give me $1,100 or $1,200 a month because they don't expect me to live as long.
As well as if you choose a spousal benefit so that if you pass away, somebody else gets it afterwards or anything like that. All those change those numbers.
Yep. So it's complicated.
Well, yeah, because most of the people I know don't have that kind of money. So they're putting the money in as they work.
So
I'm curious to know how it works.
The people you're talking about, are they typically with the state of Maryland or the federal government?
No, it's private industry.
Okay, but there are companies like IBM, Northrop Grumman, McCormick & Company, Exelon. All these companies have annuities, pensions.
Well, I guess one of them is in the port.
in the port. You know, well, they're, if they're working for a union, almost all unions do annuities for their as a fringe benefit of being a part of their union. So the Longshoremen's Union, almost all those people get an annuity, a pension, when they retire from the longshoremen and so forth.
Oh, so they don't necessarily have to build up the annuity in order to pull money out.
No, but they do and they don't. Okay, so they're working, and when they work, they get a salary.
Right.
And but their whole package of their compensation is built on, you know, what work they're doing and how much is it worth, and it's worth this much you're going to get up front in cash on a weekly or biweekly basis, and then we're going to give you medical insurance, and then if you work with us for 30 years, we're going to give you a pension. And you have to put in so much of your paycheck each week for this pension, but if you work 30 years, we're going to throw in a bunch of money also and make your pension X dollars a month so you can retire.
Okay, I understand a little bit better now.
It's complicated because the word annuity can be used in about 50, at least 50 different facets, and what you're talking about is the typical one called a pension plan from an employer. So very, very different than buying them from somebody. Okay.
Okay. Thank you.
All right, Linda. Great question. It's you know, we use the word annuity, Mike, at least in 100 different contexts.
Yeah. It's funny how many ways you can do an annuity and what you're referring to. Cause you know, sometimes we talk about annuities, a lot of times we're talking about those ones that are out there and sold. But before we talk more about that, let's make sure that we let everyone know it's an open show. There's no callers on the line, so if you were thinking, I don't want to call, I might get put on hold for a long time, you know, first one in is the next one on, 410-922-6680, 410-922-6680. But as I was saying, a lot of times we're talking about some of these high-commission products that are getting sold and hawked left and right. But, you know, there's lots of annuities that are good annuities, but they're, you know, in the sense of, a stream of income.
Yep. And, you know, I want to just reiterate again, Mike, that, you know, right, this is the time of year that you should be considering Roth conversions. Let's talk about some of the big areas that people should be considering Roth conversions. Like, let's say you have somebody, your spouse has got major medical bills. So we have clients that have spouses with Alzheimer's or dementia, and they're going, they're paying for assisted living, or they're paying for long-term care, or they're paying for nurses coming in their house, and they're going to pay, you know, $100,000 in medical bills. I could use a lot of that deduction to eat up the a Roth conversion, or I have clients that are charitably inclined, and so we set up a donor advised fund, and we do a lump sum appreciated security into a donor advised fund, and boom, we turn around and do a giant Roth conversion. You're a business owner and you have a, you know, you're having a bad year and you're going to report a tax loss this year. You could take your Roth conversion and, you know, bring income in and suck that loss right up. I mean, there's all kinds of great strategies to make sure that you're maximizing your potential. But right now, Mike, let's just tell everybody we're on an open show. 410-922-6680, 410-922-6680. We've got to go to another pause. We're going to be right back with Money, Riches, and Wealth.
Now back to more of Money, Riches, and Wealth on Talk Radio 680 WCBM.
All right, we're back, Money, Risk, and Wealth. We're with Michael P. McCarthy. And Mikey, you know, you gave him a good line there. You said nobody's on the line. You know, wait, just call in. And next thing you know, you got five callers coming in. So
yes, we do.
You want to rip through them?
Let's get right to them. Steve in White Marsh, you had a question on Bitcoin.
Yes. Can you tell me what is the reason Bitcoin goes up and down? I've seen it go up to 2,000 and down 2,000 and on and on and on. What is the reason? What's the influence of the Bitcoin movement?
Speculation.
It's just strictly speculation. I mean, you know, think about Bitcoin. What is Bitcoin? Bitcoin is nothing. It is literally nothing. And it's an illusion that because it's limited It's a limited asset that you can get. And if you get in early, you've got something valuable. And people have bought into it, and they've driven the price up. But every day, it's just strictly a popularity contest. It's the amount of people who are willing to pay $60,000 for Bitcoin believe that it's going to be worth something. But, you know, when I own Google stock or Alphabet, whatever they want to call themselves, when I own Alphabet stock, I can go in there and I could say, well, you know, this company's doing umpteen billions of dollars of revenue, and this company has umpteen billions of dollars of cash, and this company has umpteen billions of dollars of earnings. And this company has this potential and this patent and this technology, et cetera. And I can come up with a general theory of what the value of all that is. But when I think about Bitcoin, I mean, Bitcoin is nothing. It is nothing. It is a virtual currency that is backed by nothing other than the belief that it is something. And therefore, every day that it goes up and down, Steve, it is strictly, like Mike said, speculation. Somebody that believes that because there's only 21 million bitcoins that can be mined from the algorithm of the blockchain, that it's worth something. And is that true or not? Only time will tell whether that is true or not. We're going to find out 10, 15 years from now. We're going to be able to look back and say, yeah, look, man, that was really smart, those people who bought into Bitcoin. Or you're going to say, like the Southeast, investment land properties, you know, of Louisiana in the 1700s, that, you know, that was probably the dumbest thing anybody could have possibly invested in. We don't know. The jury's still out on that one, my friend.
But we do thoroughly believe in the technology behind it. We think that's
we believe in the technology, and we believe in stablecoin concept. I think that's going to be big in the future. But, you know, they say that Bitcoin is limited, but it's limited in the sense of Bitcoin. But it's not limited in how many other people could take the same technology and come up with a cryptocurrency that's virtual and worth and literally nothing. All right, Steve, I got to run. What's that?
Okay. What is technology?
It's blockchain. You look it up. It's an interesting algorithm as to it requires multiple computers around the world to solve each algorithm to prove that each transaction is accurate and correct. So it would be virtually impossible to break the algorithm and the amount of computers around the world that would have to go in to give pieces of evidence to say this is a correct piece of the algorithm. So that's how it works. All right.
Okay, thank you. Yep.
It's fascinating. Anyway, it Mikey, fascinating. Who's up next?
All right. So we've got another Steve. Steve in Sykesville, you have a health insurance question.
Yeah. Last week you mentioned strategies for wealthier individuals to get them low enough that they could get more affordable health care. And I was wondering, is that limited to people prior to going on Medicare?
Yeah. You're only using this before you go on Medicare. Once you go on Medicare, the ACA, the Affordable Care Act, and private insurance is no longer applicable. You know, good Medicare insurance is best insurance you can get, and it's usually only going to cost about $300, $350 a month, and it's the best insurance you can get. So okay. What I'm talking about is for people under the age of 65 who still need medical insurance, and if we can control their adjusted gross income, then we can get them medical insurance paid for by the federal government.
Okay, thanks.
All right, buddy. Take care. Thank you. Good question.
All right, we're going to keep on moving through callers. We got two left on the line, but there's a lot of show left, so if you've got a question, do call in. But in the meantime, Tom and Towson, how can we help you with your question about Vanguard?
Hi. I'm thinking of putting new money in the Vanguard Wellington Fund. What is your opinion of Vanguard Wellington?
I mean, you know, Vanguard Wellington's been around for a long time. It does a good job. But why wouldn't you, if you're going to buy Wellington, why wouldn't you just buy the S&P 500? It's cheaper, and it's done a better job than the Wellington Fund, if I'm not mistaken.
There's what in the Wellington Fund?
I said, why wouldn't you just buy the Vanguard S&P 500? Because I think it's outperformed the Wellington Fund, and it's a lot cheaper. Because the Wellington Fund just owns large-cap U.S. stocks. Okay, And it's a good fund. So if you choose to buy it, I certainly, nobody should ever tell you that that's a dumb decision to buy the Wellington Fund. It's a good fund, well managed. But, you know, the cost of that fund, I don't know for sure. I think it's 0.6% or something a year, whereas the S&P 500 is 0.03. And they're going to be similar in performance. And and I don't think Wellington's actually outperformed the S&P 500 over the last umpteen years. Are you looking at that, Mikey?
I'm trying to.
You're trying to. You know, he's not doing a very good job.
I got
that
a very slow internet connection.
What's that, my friend?
For money.
I couldn't hear you. I'm sorry. I couldn't hear you.
New money.
New money.
Thought Vanguard Wellington would be more of than the S&P 500, which is a mix.
You keep breaking up on me. I can't make out what you're saying, unfortunately. So,
okay. All right. Thank you.
I got to go.
Right. Sorry, we have to go from that one. And if I get an answer on this, I'll say it out later in the show.
Yeah, we'll talk about it. Go ahead.
But in the meantime, Sheila in Essex, you had a question about mutual funds as gifts.
Oh, yes. Hi. I'm thinking of giving my granddaughter as a college graduation present a couple of $1,000 in Ave Maria Mutual Fund. And I wondered, does that make sense? Is that going to be hard for her to deal with for tax consequences? Or, or should it be in a Roth? Or how would you do that? That sort of thing.
Does your granddaughter, you said?
Yes.
Does she work?
Yeah, she's working as a lifeguard.
Okay. How much money do you think she'll make this year?
Not much.
I mean, will she make $1,000, $2,000?
I don't know. You know, I don't know. But
so the answer to your question is yes. If she has earned income, you should do a Roth IRA for her, number one.
Okay.
Number two, if you're going to buy that fund, make sure you buy it through a brokerage firm.
Oh, okay.
Don't go direct to Ave Maria.
Okay.
And so you would go to Schwab or Fidelity or E-Trade, and you'd say, I want to buy $2,000 of the Ave Maria fund. I want to put it in my granddaughter's name. And if she made $2,000 of earnings, you would put it in a Roth IRA for her, okay? And so you would set up a Roth IRA for her. And you would buy the Ave Maria fund and put the $2,000 into it. And, you know, again, it's kind of like the last caller on the Wellington fund. The Ave Maria fund isn't a great fund, but it's certainly not a bad fund in any way, shape, or form. I would never tell anybody not to buy it.
She graduated from Ave Maria University. So.
Okay, so it makes sense for you. So,
sort of cute, yeah.
But just make sure that you buy it through a brokerage firm, not direct from Ave Maria. And if she has earnings, you would do it in a Roth IRA for her. And that would be, you know, because here's the cool thing. You don't have to tell her this, but if you put in $2,000 into the Ave Maria fund in a Roth IRA, and it grows to $3,000 anytime in her life, she can always take the $2,000 contribution back out of that Roth IRA without penalty, without taxes, et cetera, et cetera.
Okay. What if she did make less than $2,000? I could not put $2,000 in a
You Roth could not put $2,000, and you can only do up to whatever her W-2 says for the year.
Okay. Thank you.
So that's if she really makes $1,000, you give her $1,000, and you'd have to do another $1,000 into another account. Or you could wait until the next year and contribute it then. Okay.
And then, does that, you know, does she, when she does her taxes, is that going to be a hard thing for her?
No, it doesn't have any impact on the tax return at all.
Oh, thank you so much.
None at all.
Take care.
All right. Thank you. Yeah, we got to go, Mikey, and we're on an open show. Anybody online before we go to a pause?
When we come back from the break, we're going to be going to Mark in Catonsville.
410-922-6680. We'll be right back.
Hi, this is Drew Tignanelli of the Financial Consulate, saying a financial advisor must have a tax planning passion. I'm appealing only to those with a net worth of more than $5 million or with taxable income of over $400,000. You are the target for higher and higher taxes. If you're in this elite club, you can no longer afford to have a financial advisor that is not passionate to minimize taxes. I'm appealing to you with income over $400,000 or a net worth greater than $5 million because you are the target and need the financial consulate's passion to minimize income taxes and estate taxes. Call to set up your introductory meeting, 410-823-7283 or 410-823-SAVE. Or online, financialconsulate.com. If your taxable income is $400,000 or more, or your net worth is over $5 million, you are the target. So call to begin your tax plan, 410-823-7283, or online, financialconsulate.com.
To more of Money, Riches, and Wealth on Talk Radio 680 WCBM.
And we're back, Money, Riches, and Wealth. I'm here with Michael P. McCarthy. We're on an open show, and as usual, we get a bunch of callers at the end, so we're going to rock and roll, Michael.
All right. Mark in Catonsville, you have a question about qualified versus non-qualified?
Correct. I'm retiring. My wife's retiring. I'm 63. She's 60. And I have non-qualified funds that I was going to use as a supplementary income. Is there ever a time that you use qualified?
So when you say funds, qualified, you're referring to your pre-tax 401k money. Is that what you're referring to?
Yes, the IRA.
The IRA, et cetera, et cetera. Of course, there's times that you would use pre-tax. But the first thing you would have to do is do the Roth conversion analysis, because If you have pre-tax money and you have post-tax money, in other words, you have after-tax money, it may be beneficial to just keep using the after-tax money and then take your pre-tax money and convert it to Roth, because now you'll be able to keep your tax bracket real low. You do the Roth conversion to bring your tax bracket up to a reasonable point. And boom, you take money out of your post-tax bucket that you're paying taxes on, and it becomes tax-free bucket in your Roth account. That's the way you need to be doing it. That's what you need to be thinking about as you go into this period of time of retirement.
So thank you so much.
All right.
Thank you.
But I mean, you know, I can't explain the incredible positive benefit that brings forth to a client. You know, when you do that tax planning in that regard.
No, absolutely. You know? Absolutely. Well, Rick in East Baltimore, you had an Amazon question.
Okay. Hey. Nice show. Listen, I got an interesting situation I need your opinion on. About 30 years ago, my nephew, whatever, he got a job with a brokerage firm. And, of course, he'd have to build up their client list. So he came to me. So I gave him $30,000. So he gave me this portfolio, you know, it's this and that, and this is in there, General Electric, Cisco, blah, blah, blah. So anyway, interestingly enough, he bought me 300 shares of Amazon stock.
Right. Okay.
Now, this 300 shares of Amazon stock, of course, I buy and hold. I don't do anything else. It's worth a little over $1 million. It's a little under a million. It's a little over a million, but you could call it a million. You know, it's been like that for over at least almost a year now. What should I do with this? What is your opinion? I should just keep holding it, wait for the split, sell some of it? What do you think I should do?
Well, it's a complicated question because, you know, I don't know your full situation. So if a million was 80% of your net worth, then I would be concerned. If it was 10% of your net worth, I would say, you know, Amazon's a great company. And if you're comfortable with holding that concentrated position, it's a great company, and I would continue to hold it, you know. There's always some answers to it, you know, like, for example, you can do an exchange fund. Are you familiar with that? So what an exchange fund is, you take your Amazon stock and you donate it to a mutual fund where they have other concentrated positions, and now you diversify in the fund without actually having to sell your Amazon stock.
Yeah,
and,
okay.
You don't have to do all of it. You could do like 500,000 of it, and now you bring your exposure down to just Amazon to 500,000 from a million. But if you're comfortable and it's not the end of the world if that stock goes down by 50%, Amazon's a great company, and I don't see anybody usurping their dominance. And they got many more industries they can monopolize. They haven't even begun to hit other industries that they're ready to.
They're hitting pharmaceuticals now.
Yeah, well, that was a big one that I expected them to hit soon. Is the pharmaceutical industry. So, you know, don't count these guys out anytime soon.
I see some of the articles or listen to the radio, read the paper. The government might be rattling and making some noises about maybe breaking Amazon up because it's too big and it's too dominant. So I don't know how they would
Look,
do that or if they actually would do it.
There are too many politicians that are getting too much money from Amazon. It's all talk, so don't worry about it.
Hey, what do you think is the chance of them splitting the stock?
They're not going to split the stock. Don't expect it.
They're
going to be like Buffett has led the way to say, don't split your stock. There's no benefit of splits of stock anyway. Think about it. You own 100 shares of stock at $10 a share. They split the stock 2-for-1, and now you own 200 shares of stock at $5 a share.
Yeah, I think they did it to lower the price to make it more attractive to new investors.
But, you know, they're into the point now that a lot of companies don't like to do that
and
anymore.
And now a lot of brokerages will let you buy fractional shares. So it's
Schwab will let you buy slices, small as you want. So,
Tell you. Okay, wait, one last thing. Every time I see my cousin, I thank him profusely for buying that Amazon for me.
Good job. Take care, buddy.
Did you sell on Amazon? I said, hell no. He said, oh, my God.
All right. Well, we got to go on to some other callers here, Rick, but thanks for calling.
Take care.
All right. And without further ado, Kent in Towson, you had Roth versus regular IRA question.
Yeah, sure. Thanks for taking my call. Yeah, I have a nice benefit plan at work. I have the option to take my 401k as traditional or Roth. And I expect to be in the same tax bracket after I retire, so I don't expect to go down. But some of my colleagues tell me I should be in the Roth so I have tax diversification that I would have, you know.
So let me ask you a question. Are you live in Maryland? Or are you going to stay in Maryland when you retire?
Well, so I live in Maryland. My children have all left Maryland, probably not to return.
So where would you likely retire?
Possibly North Carolina. More likely than anywhere.
North Carolina is no difference in benefit than Maryland. Maryland is Maryland's a little more expensive than North Carolina, but not enough to make it worth your while to wait. You definitely, if your tax bracket is same or higher, you go all Roth. You need to go all Roth. Did you hear that?
That's
very simple. The advantage of that is, okay, what's the tax bracket right now and the maximum tax bracket? It's 37%. What's it going to go to in January 1, 2026? It's going to go to 39.6%, whether President Biden and his, and the Congress do anything different between now and then, we know for a fact it's going to 39.6%. So you're not going to be in the same tax bracket. You're going to be in a higher tax bracket no matter what at this point in time. And the same tax bracket, I could do the mathematical equation for you and show you that the same tax bracket of Roth money is more powerful than the same amount of money in pre-tax 401k money. And I don't have the time to do it right now. But you give me next week or, 2 weeks from now, you listen to the show. I'll do the mathematical formula and show you exactly why the Roth is going to win. Okay?
Okay, I'll wait for that because I always thought it came out as a wash.
No, it does not. And I'll prove it to you beyond a shadow of a doubt. Okay?
I'll keep listening. Thank you.
All right, buddy.
All right. Well, we got just a minute left. Nick and Perry Hall, how can we help you with inflation?
Hey, Drew, Mike. I just asked real quick. Drew, I think it was last week you mentioned that you thought that interest rates on bonds were a better indicator on inflation than, I think it was like CPI. I was just wondering if you could extrapolate out on what exactly you meant by that. And then, two, is there anything you're recommending to hedge against inflation?
The best hedge against inflation is undoubtedly stocks. They've proven that beyond a shadow of a doubt because stocks are the companies that charge the prices that are going up. And if a company has pricing power, they're going to be the best hedge against inflation. Bonds are a fixed interest rate over a long period of time. Nobody's going to accept lower than the rate of inflation that they expect over the next few years or numerous years if they think that inflation is going to devastate that bond. And so don't discount bond investors. They're not saying inflation's coming. So don't think that it's going to roar back. So that's my opinion.
We gotta go. We're sorry.
We do have
to
go.
And it's been a great show, sir.
We have to go, and this is Drew Tignanelli saying God bless.